Chapter 3. Wrath of Iron. Jutting from the desert sand like a sliver of arching bone, it looked obvious enough. As he arrived at the battle site, Gabriel Santar wondered why it had taken them so long to find the Eldar node. Take out the nodes and disrupt the enemy's cohesion. Like trying to communicate across an interrupted circuit, the Eldar's ability to coordinate their defense would be severely inhibited. Break the nodes and break the enemy. These were the edicts of Lord Manus, both to his legion and his brothers warmongering elsewhere on 1544. It rankled that the Primarch would not get to see his plan born to fruition. For that, and many other reasons, he dearly wished his lord was present. The Morlocks, together with Tarkan's small band of snipers, had returned at the head of a massed column of army battle tanks. What was left of the army divisions, mainly Dogan Maulers and some Veridan Koracts, had also made the journey, most hanging off hull rails or perched atop the cupolas of the larger vehicles. Some mechanized elements had also survived the desert, and along with a few sentinel outriders, they carried what was left of the Sarvan Masonites. A ragged force, but reinforcement nonetheless. Judging by the impasse around the node and its defenders, they couldn't have arrived soon enough. The node itself was immense, and wreathed with a crackling energy shield the iron hands were struggling to crack. Santar could see no power source, no objective they could attack and neutralize to bring the defenses down. It was generated by some other means, unknown to them. Heavy impacts blossomed in bright azure bursts, and the shield rippled to diffuse their explosive energy across its curved surface. Ruman refused to concede defeat. His rapiers and missile batteries kept up a constant fusillade, charging the air with their noise and actinic stench. Expulsion clouds thickened into a fog that rolled off the bank where the Ironwrought had positioned his divisions and spilled down into Medusan's advancing companies below. Santar was met by Bion Henrikos, and the sergeant snapped a quick salute when he saw the first captain. While Medusan was overseeing the battle, he'd placed his hulking sergeant in command of the Iron Tenth. These warriors looked impatient for combat, while Medusan's vanguard, spearheaded by the Morlocks, tried to force an opening several hundred meters deeper into the field. "You can use the army divisions?" asked the first captain before Henrikos could voice a greeting. There was no time to observe pleasantries. Amongst the Iron Hand's officer cadre, the sergeant had the greatest empathy with the humans. Santar merely wanted that utilized and conveyed as much in his perfunctory demeanour. No word was spoken of the mission or the Primarch. It was not the sergeant's place to ask, though he did cast a quick glance at Desan, who was a step behind the first captain. There must have been a short shake of the head from Desan, because Henrikos stiffened in grief and anger, but fell back to his duty in short order. That was to Henrikos's credit as he appraised the arriving column.
"Just under 15,000 men and 63 operational vehicles," said Henrikos. "Yes, my lord, I believe I can use these divisions."
Santar nodded.
"Good. They are ragged, brother sergeant," he warned.
"Ready for a fight," countered Henrikos.
Smiling beneath his battle helm, Santar said,
"Indeed."
He liked this, Henrikos, his dogged spirit.
"Where is Captain Medusan?"
Devastatingly powerful ranks of plasma cannons and tarantula gun platforms boomed across the battle line, filling the rear echelons with light and thunder. Henrikos waited a few moments for their salvo to subside before pointing northeast to where the acting commander was stationed. Santar saw Medusan and his retinue, but his gaze lingered on the shield after the plasma wake and heavy bolter smoke had dispersed. He expected a crack in the Eldar's armour, even a fissure. Nothing. The shield still held.
"It has been like this for the past hour," said Henrikos.
Santar grunted, displeased.
Get the army ordnance sounding immediately. I want to hear it from the front line when I'm standing next to that energy shield. We'll punch a hole through it for you, my lord. See that you do. Flesh is weak, but those tanks are steel, he reminded Henrikos.
Santar didn't linger. He headed over to Medusan.
Desan, with me,
he growled, watching the ineffectual barrage continue to rain down on the shield.
Their resistance is fearsome, said the captain of the Iron Tenth as Santar approached.
You sound surprised.
Medusan carried a hollow slate in his bionic hand and was appraising the tactical dispositions of his force. Heavies gave support fire from range, while three wedges of iron hands from the 16th, 34th and 27th clan companies provided a relentless assault on the entrenched Eldar positions. Santar recognised the sigils of the Vorganon, Burkar and Felg clans battling tirelessly at the front. Down the centre, where the firestorm was hottest, he knew he would find the clan Averni, his Morlocks. Judging by the static representation of the veteran company, they too had reached an impasse. No Iron Hand had yet reached the shield wall itself. Eldar forces in front of it, acting as a breaker, were thick, but also retreating back behind it. In reserve for the Iron Hands were Sorgul's clan warriors of the Iron Tenth, Medusan's own kith and kin, as well as Cadoran, Lokopt, and Ungavar clans who brought down Hellfire from the high ground. Even with all of that might at their disposal, the Iron Hands could not breach the Elder Cordon. 500 meters ahead of him, the flesh and iron versions of Medusan's army were doing the actual fighting. Rows of legionaries strode implacably into the teeth of the enemy, bolters kicking up a steady barrage. Medusan had positioned smaller divisions of conversion beamers and graviton cannons amongst the bulk of the battalions, identified by the sporadic flash from their barrels and arcing lances of power. But the enemy was resolute.
"They're tougher than expected," Medusan admitted.
Scorch marks blackened his battle plate, suggesting he'd attempted to storm the Eldar outpost in an earlier sortie and been repulsed.
"You thought they would yield easily, brother captain?"
Medusan's head twitched slightly when he realized the Primarch was not with Santar.
"The Gorgon?"
he asked, though his tone suggested he wasn't sure he wanted to know the answer.
"Gone."
"When will he return?"
He made no suggestion of the Primarch's death. Such a thing was beyond countenance, though the shadow of that possibility passed over Medusan's features like a dark cloud.
"He will return,"
he rasped, fists clenching of their own volition as a vengeful fury came upon him.
"We failed to find him."
Santar had no answer to give.
"He'll be angry when he does come back."
Santar gestured to the hollow slate and the slow manoeuvres of the forces depicted on it.
"That I would like to see."
"They are well corralled," said Medusan.
Reserve forces of Iron Hands were moving in, encircling the node and its guardians in a ring of black ceramite.
"Laying siege to a foe isn't really our way, though, is it, Shadrach?"
Medusan gave a feral smile.
"No, First Captain, it is not."
"They hold tenaciously to something."
"Sounds like you admire them."
Santar's eyes never left the holoslate, thinking and strategizing. In his time as equerry, he had learned much from Ferus Manus. Often the Gorgon stood in Gilliman's shadow, but he was just as adroit a tactician. Others claimed his only drawback was that his single-mindedness sometimes left him slightly myopic. Though he would never speak of it aloud, Santar believed Ferus didn't have the Battle King's patience for endless scenario-making either.
"Admire them?" "No," said Santar with absolute certainty. "I want to understand them so I can better destroy them."
Then he added, "Have you breached the energy shield even once?"
"We haven't even reached it. I expected their capitulation when facing our obvious numerical superiority, First Captain. It's only logical."
Perhaps there is no concept of inevitability in the Eldar culture.
Medusan's silence intimated he didn't understand that.
Suggestions, then? Asked Santar.
Hit them harder. Throw more warriors against their defences until they shatter.
Fortunately, I have brought some with me who are keen to be reunited with their clansmen.
The Morlock strained at the leash behind him. Medusan cast them a quick glance.
Hungry, too.
War is an unsubtle thing, Shadrach, Santar said. Sometimes you just have to wield a larger hammer. Show me where you would like it to fall, and we'll make that breach for you.
That is comforting to hear.
Medusan held up a hand, pausing to listen to a series of reports across the feed as the various commanders advanced or altered position. He met Santar's gaze when he was finished.
I assumed you'd take command upon your return, First Captain. I've already sent our troops' dispositions across the feed to your retinal lens.
Not necessary, said Santar. You have this in hand, brother. I want to dirty my claws with Xenos blood.
Medusan thumped his armoured chest, unable to stifle his pride at the First Captain's confidence in him.
Then let your wrath fall here, my lord.
As the words registered in Santar's feed, an icon lit up on his retinal display. The other troop dispositions overlaid it. The rest of the Morlocks were holding at the very brunt of the battle, attacking the Eldar defenders at close quarters. Here the defences were thickest. Here the aliens wore heavier armour and brought their most devastating weapons and gun platforms to bear. Even at a distance, it looked ferocious. Ignoring the cauldron he was about to step into, Santar scrutinised the distant shield as if he could discern a weakness just by looking at it.
How deep do you think it goes, brother?
Medusan followed his First Captain's eyeline. He smiled when he realised what Santar was suggesting. Santar touched a finger to his gorget to open the comm feed.
Iron wrought.
Ruman came back between loud salvos of heavy weapons fire.
I need you to do something for me,
Santar said, and relayed his plan.
You are the hammer, said Medusan,
when the First Captain closed the feed again. Santar's lightning claws slid free of their sheaths. He fed a crackle of power down the blades.
Then it's time we swung and struck.
Arrogance deliberately visible and overflowing, Santar forged through the Iron Hand's ranks that parted for him and his entourage of Morlocks. He kept his helmet maglocked to his thigh plate. He was more vulnerable without it, but the warriors around him needed to see his face. Without the Primarch, it was up to him to inspire. Behind his mask of ferocity, he hid his desire to be fighting alongside his lord. He could not imagine a time when that would not be so. He raised his iron fist to the Morlocks and roared,
"Iron and death!"
An insistent voice inside him intruded on Santar's belligerence and the resounding affirmation of his charges that was hard to ignore.
"Father, where are you?"
Ferrus scowled.
"Petty tricks," he stated flatly, though none of the hanging skulls in the abattoir seemed to hear him.
Death did not unnerve the Gorgon, even the prospect of his own. Long ago, in the desolate wastes of Medusa, he had come to terms with the inevitability of his own mortality. He would live longer than most, perhaps even millennia, for who could say what the limits of the Emperor's gene science were? But he was a warrior, and warriors would eventually meet their end at the edge of a blade. Ferrus hoped his ending would be glorious. He also hoped, one day, for peace. But without war, he wondered, what would then become of his purpose and function? Scowl became sneer, and Ferris's lip curled derisively at the strung effigies meant to portend his doom. Swollen with righteous indignation, he had to resist the urge to destroy every one of them. Without the lambent illumination of the gemstones, it was still light enough to see, even though the light was crimson and pulsing like a vein. The skulls were far enough apart to weave through without the need to touch them. Twisting in the breeze, one of the heads yawed around to face him. He smiled at the cadaverous doppelganger, his eyes narrowed and cold.
"I would make a handsomer corpse," he said, and smiled.
It sounded like a remark Fulgrim might have made. At the thought of his brother, a sound echoed in the Primarch's ear that he recognized, the hissing discord that had dogged his steps. The hunter had returned. Likely it had never left. To this, Ferus paid his full attention, for its threat was real, and it was close. It was in the chamber with him, slithering alongside him, matching his every step.
"Come into the light, coward!" he snarled. "I would like to see the enemy who wishes me slain 100 times over. I will make a lie of that assumption, though you will only suffer one death."
His belligerent companion did not respond. Ferus went on. Halfway across the grim abattoir, the cluster of the skulls became so tightly packed that Ferus would have no choice but to ease them apart in order to pass. Using Forgebreaker like a cattle prod, he tentatively pushed one of the heads aside. A slow moan escaped the dead lips. A second of the heads echoed the first, then a third and fourth. Gripped by a sudden and terrifying epidemic, every one of the decaying skulls began to animate in a baleful chorus. They were alive. Dragged back from damnation, these revenants, wearing the flesh of Ferus Manus, had returned to haunt him. Revulsion, rage and disbelief warred inside the Primarch, and he backed away, expecting an attack. A skull brushed his neck. Dry lips touched his skin like a kissed caress. Recoiling, he collided with another. A cheekbone shattered with the force. Bone fragments cascaded. A tooth bit into his armored shoulder plate and stuck. Ferus pulled it out, snarling as the moaning rose to a wail. The sound was low and accusing.
"You did this to us. You consigned us to this fate. We are in limbo because of you."
Ferus's fists clenched, his teeth locked.
"Shut up," he hissed.
His fury boiled over and he whirled around, bringing Forgebreaker up in front of him.
"The dead should stay dead."
Such debasement only confirmed the weakness of flesh and its eventual corruption. The fact it was his own dead visage made no difference to the Gorgon. He had held back before, allowed temperance to stay his hand. Now he would smash every one of the wretched things to bone dust and memory. A streak of silver flashed in the darkness, the abattoir's light flowing over it like congealed blood. Ferris's first blow never fell. Agonizing hellfire roared up his spine and bent it almost double. Armor plate cracked with the Primarch's sudden and violent convulsions, split like hot metal cooled too fast. Pain that would kill 100 lesser men flooded his veins and nearly crippled him. Ferus was bowed, down on one knee and hurting. Spitting phlegm and blood, he unleashed a peal of anger and fought the poison down. Pellucid silver cooled the burning of the wound, miraculous but far from cleansing, and the Primarch straightened. Ferus's other hand was clenched around his wrist. It throbbed beneath the fingers of living metal, told him he had been hurt. Worse, he had been weakened. Forgebreaker was lost, spilled from his numbed grasp and sent clattering to the ground. He lifted his hand gingerly, like peering beneath battlefield dressings and expecting to be confronted by gangrene. 2 puncture wounds, deep and wide like dagger thrusts, pierced his inviolable metal skin. The wounds bubbled with venom, and Ferus watched in disbelief as the living metal corroded before his eyes. As if stung, he withdrew his other hand, afraid that the taint would spread to both. Beneath, the bleeding silver, burned and blistered skin was revealed, and in it a memory was born. Standing at the edge of the lava chasm, the beast above, breath of cold and sulphur, hands raw and bleeding, but taut enough to snap anvils. The beast was waning. The battle they'd fought had taken its toll. Molten silver upon its flanks reflected the magma glow and shimmered with heat haze. Such a magnificent creature. He would kill it anyway. His dominance proved beyond doubt. I am stronger. Fangs bared, a song of fury upon its lips. He would prove it. He would find a way to pierce its miraculous flesh and kill it. The lava beckoned. His forge. Here weapons were made and unmade. I will prove I am stronger. I must, for if I do not, what does that make me?
Memory faded, vague and indistinct. Myth and fact wove a single narrative that left him wondering at the truth of his own origins. Distraction was momentary. Need for survival and his warrior instincts took over. Rather than search for Forgebreaker, Ferus ripped a spatha from his waist, a thick, meaty blade that was keen-edged and deadly. Numbed by the virulent poison, his wounded arm hung low at his side. Ferus took the blade in his left hand, adjusting stance and grip before he scored a slit down his wrist to release the poison. Burning brine-yellow fluid seeped like acid down his red raw hand, dripping off bloodied fingers. Pain eased. So too the clamour in his skull that felt like it was being pummeled by a dozen gauntleted fists. Like my head is being cut from my shoulders. Ignoring the mournful cries of the heads, shutting out the death rattle of his own voice, heard 100 times over, Ferus searched the shadows. He turned quickly at the glint of silver in his peripheral vision. It flashed with the urgency of a warning beacon. Preternatural reflexes saved him from being maimed further. He lashed out, but the creature was swift beyond reason and slid from the Primarch's enraged clutches. Serpentine, but like no snake Ferus had ever encountered, silver-scaled, it was not unlike the spawn of a beast he had fought long ago. Stars were merely chips of granite in the darkling sky back then, when there was only Medusa and the endless Arctic night. Swallowed by shadow, the impression of the creature was fleeting, but familiar. Perhaps we have met before. A tail crack made the Gorgon turn, and he swung again, blindly, and cut only air. He felt slower. Despite excising the poison, the sting of his wound was creeping up his shoulder and into his neck. The phantom pain he'd felt around his throat ever since coming to the desert burned like white fire. Real or imagined, this creature could hurt him. Pulled from some black abyss of old night, it had manifested in this nether realm, intent on his undoing. His jailers knew his past, his primordial fears and desires, and taunted him with visions of an imagined future. They plucked strands of unrealized fate and watched the vibrations resonate through the Primarch's demeanor. Ferus knew he could not give in to it. Delirium had started to affect his senses as whatever venom the serpent possessed did its work.
Endure.
The word was like his anchor. Lose that, and he would be cast adrift upon an endless sea of chaos. The hiss of living metal, as it dripped from his arm and splashed onto the ground in molten gobbets, brought the Primarch back around. He shook his head to banish the worst of the fog threatening at the edge of his vision. Basilisk, Chimerae, Hydra, such fiends had many names and forms. The creature was none of those, but it was powerful. It had to be, to undo what was supposed to be incorruptible.
Is nothing incorruptible?
What were all the frost giants and ice drakes compared to that? Ferus pushed the unworthy thoughts aside, realizing they were being fed to him. The raging core bubbling beneath his cold exterior began to vent. His grip tightened on the spatha, and the leather bindings wound around the hilt cracked. The weapon had been a gift from Vulcan, and the memory of his brother gave him strength.
"I forged it to fit your hand, Ferus," he had said. "It is your sword. Not the equal of Forgebreaker, I grant you, but a worthy weapon, I hope. You honour me by carrying it."
Ferus had turned it over in his hand, his cold eyes running across the filigree and ornate intaglio, the inlaid gemstones and Nocturnian inscription. The fine, serrated teeth were diamond-sharp and acid-edged, the metal of its forging dense and unyielding. Ignoring the weapon's obvious craft and beauty, Ferus had at once seen its potential as a blade, but chose to be harsh instead of praising his brother's craftsmanship.
"Why does it need such ornamentation? Can I kill my enemies better because of it?"
There was a smirk upon his face that in retrospect Ferus was not proud of. Vulcan had taken it in his stride.
"It's a master weapon, with a master's pride lavished upon it," he admitted. "When I draw my blade, I want my enemies to know it is a warrior king's weapon they face, wielded by a warrior king's hand."
"Even though you would rather wield a hammer to create than a blade to destroy?"
Vulcan had smiled then, and the gesture was warm as a lava glow.
"Nocturnians are pragmatists, my brother. While war is necessary, I will fight, but I hope that one day I can put down my sword."
His eyes flashed with fire.
"Until then, I'll keep my killing edge sharp."
Ferus had nodded and sheathed the blade, attaching it to his weapons belt.
"I might have need of a knife," he had said lightly, and touched a silver hand to his glabrous skull. "For when the serfs don't scrape close enough to the skin."
They laughed, the Gorgon raucous and ribald, the Drake booming and hearty as they shared a rare moment of levity, until the crusade forced them onto different paths, until 1544. The memory of that day vanished in the reflected metal of the blade. Ferus had named it Draken in honour of his brother. He needed its bite now, and was glad of the Spatha's presence in his hand. Much like in the mausoleum gallery, the walls in the abattoir were polished obsidian. Their mirrored black stretched into infinity. The heads were reflected there, but in the doppelganger world they were sheathed in flesh. Severed arteries pulsed, spewing blood. It spattered his brow, still warm, still living. The wound was fresh cut, and it blazed against the neck of the real Ferus, who fought his revulsion at the spectacle rendered in the darkling glass. They were laughing, the severed bloody heads, all of them. They were laughing at him.
"Idiot! Weakling! Unwanted son!"
This last barb stuck in his throat. Ferus was remarkable, and on Medusa he was a king of kings. None could match him. But when his father came and brought him to 17 remarkable brothers, he realized his place. Unlike Vulcan, who had accepted his position gladly and humbly, Ferus railed. Was he not the equal of his siblings? When faced with the glory of Horus, the majesty of Sanguinius, or even Rogel Dorn's dogged solidity, it was easy to believe that some sons would wait in the wings while the chosen few enacted their father's grand plan for the galaxy. Ferus wanted that light for himself, to be equal. He wasn't vain. He merely wanted to be acknowledged. His entire existence until that point had been spent in the pursuit of strength. He could not believe that all of that had been done in an ancillary role. Ferus could not believe his father had brought him from one shadow to merely consign him to another.
"I will make you proud, father. I will prove my worth." "Come, then," he bellowed, but the challenge was unmet. The creature would snap at him from the shadows and lay him low with a thousand cuts.
An inglorious death. Ferus would not submit to that. But the creature was fast. He had yet to land a blow, and striking at flashes would not yield victory. It wanted to goad him, make him lower his guard, and open up a mortal wound. He caught sudden movement in the corner of his eye and followed it, holding out the spatha defensively, its blade flat and angled away from his body. It was hard to refrain from violence. His entire existence was violence. Fury was hammering in his ears like a pealing bell. He focused, and the clamour lessened to a dull roar. The creature was close, though it betrayed no sign of its presence. It felt as though Ferus was somehow bonded to it, possibly through the bite and the taint of its venom. He wanted to hurt it for that, to redress the balance, then destroy it. A font of inner rage was lapping at the edges of his consciousness, close to spilling over from thought into action. He remembered the forge and the solace of working metal. The only salve to his wrath, the one thing that could placate his volcanic anger. In spite of such anger, Ferus knew patience, even if it sometimes felt like he was grasping at smoke. Unlike Vulcan, patience did not come easily to him. It was an early lesson for all forge-smiths. Tempering could not be rushed. Metal needed time. It needed to wait until it was ready. So would he. He saw Forgebreaker lying on the ground, but resisted the urge to take it. The creature wanted him to. It waited for him to reach for his hammer. Vulcan's blade would more than suffice. He trusted his brother's craft. He should have told him that. Ferus closed his eyes and listened. He heard a faint and rasping refrain, almost masked by the ambient noise, the reptilian hiss of the serpent. "Now I'll bait the hook." Blind, he was vulnerable. So he lowered his sword, let his arm fall by his side. He listened harder, allowed his heart to still. The cacophony of the dead lessened. The serpent's voice intensified, and Ferus perceived two words.
"Angel."
It hurt just to think it, as if it carried potency beyond its literal meaning.
"Exterminatus."
It was hidden within the multiple susurrations of the creature, enfolded within pitch and cadence like a secret note in a virtuoso's perfect symphony. It meant nothing to him, yet he felt the weight of its importance like it was a physical thing.
"And the heavens burned with its refulgent beauty."
The words came to Ferris's lips unbidden, as if belonging to another speaker without the power to articulate them. Something dark was at work here, something evil that intruded upon the nether realm Ferus was bound to. He wondered if his captors realized. There was no time to consider it further. Doing so would serve no purpose anyway. Breath held in his chest, Ferus heard the scrape of metal that presaged the creature's attack, its wickering tongue. Trusting to instinct, He waited until the creature was almost upon him before cutting. Scaled flesh parted against his sword. His eyes snapped open like armored visors, and Ferus thrust again. A snarl of pain rewarded him. As he withdrew Draken from the shadows, its edge was coated in gore. It was not blood, but an ichorous fluid, heliotrope purple in colour, gripping viscously to the blade. He had hurt the creature. Its susurrus grew in pitch, a collision of anger and pain. Metal scale scratching against stone faded as the monster retreated into the darkness. Ferus did not move for several minutes, listening for signs of its return. The wound in his forearm pulsed with fetid vigour, and the silver lustre had almost burned away completely, leaving it raw and agonized. Sheathing the spatha, he reached down and his fingers curled around the haft of Forgebreaker, as if weapon and wielder had sought each other out. Never had his hammer felt so heavy and cumbersome in his grasp. "Flesh is weak," he muttered, and cursed his impotence in bringing to heel the forces that conspired against him. The memory of the phrase hidden in the serpent's voice returned to him. "Angel exterminatus," as did the sense of malfeasance it carried. Some other sentience had pushed the words into his mind. It didn't feel like a warning, as so much of this crystalline labyrinth did. It was a promise, a prophecy. Ferus was too weak to unravel it. A febrile sweat lathered his forehead as he staggered the last few steps through the abattoir and into whatever further horrors awaited him. With the absence of the serpent, the hanging skulls had ceased to chatter and were truly dead once more. The breeze ebbed to nothing, and they stopped swinging too, making it easier to avoid touching them. Even their features seemed less like his own, their aspects less daunting. A singular thought drove Ferus now. Like a Medusan land shark, he had to keep moving. To stop was to die. He managed three steps before he fell, and darkness took him. The cool aura of the bone sanctuary was charged with indignant energy.
"It is affecting you," said the diviner.
"It should not have been able to breach the Ossuary Road," answered the other.
"Careful, I see Cain manifesting in your mood. Step back upon the path."
The other was not ready to relent just yet.
"My anger is well founded. He was not meant to die. Not in here, not from this."
The diviner peered at the other intently. His gaze was contemplative and unfathomable.
"And yet his life is threatened. You lace the waters of fate with enough blood, and sooner or later sharks will circle."
"It should not be here at all."
"The bone roads we travel are far from secure. Ever since the fall, you know that. Are you so surprised that something malicious has come?"
About to object, the other's humour changed from choler to melancholy.
"What can be done?"
"Release him and accept failure."
"We are too close for that."
The diviner leaned back against a spur of arching bone and folded his hands upon his lap.
"Then you have to let fate run its course and hope he can defeat that which you have allowed into your cage."
There was a pause that the diviner did not choose to fill. He merely watched. The other was displeased, ruled by emotion and thwarted ambition. The diviner did not need prescience to know what his companion was about to ask.
"What do you see?"
It smacked of desperation.
"Nothing. Everything. I see a billion futures and possible outcomes. Some so infinitesimally different you could spend eons looking for the variation and still not find it."
"That is not an answer."
"I advise you to propose a narrower question, then."
"Will he die? Am I undone?"
"Yes and no."
"Your meaning is needlessly cryptic."
We are fighting a war of fate. We, too, are merely agents in this conflict. Through hubris, you allowed the primordial annihilator.
The other touched the spirit stone around his neck at the mention of the name.
A piece of its essence, at least, into your cage. And now it is trapped with your intended prey. Chaos has a way of clouding the path of fate.
The other sagged in his seat of bone. His hand trembled as he felt the protection and anonymity of their sanctuary start to fragment. A haggard face looked up at the diviner through hollowed eyes.
How long before it finds us?
Soon.
Santar knew the warriors bleeding through the shimmering energy shield. A wake of Eldar bodies, the smashed detritus of what had come before, together with the remains of their weapon platforms, lay scattered behind the Iron Hands. With Santar leading them, they had driven deep into the enemy's defences and were on the cusp of assaulting the shield directly. It blazed before the Morlocks like an azure sun. Santar could almost taste the electric tang on his tongue. Its heat made him want to shade his eyes, but he resisted the urge. One last obstacle was left to overcome. Still wraith-like, they did not appear as incorporeal as they had in the desert basin. Bone-armoured, clutching their curved singing swords, the Eldar had sent their best warriors through the shield for them. Their hell scream hit the Morlocks like a wrecking ball. Santar yelled through a barricade of teeth, "Take it!" His every bone vibrated. The teeth in his skull cracked with the effort of clenching them. Much more punishment, and they would shatter. "I can shout louder," he promised the warrior, bearing down on him. Santar advanced and turned his forward step into an attacking lunge. His lightning claw cut through the warrior's blade and carried on into its sternum. Stepping over the eviscerated alien's corpse, he found another. It leapt his diagonal swipe, weaved inside the counterthrust, and pirouetted alongside the first captain's unprotected flank. Santar winced as a power-charge blade cut into his battle plate, but there it stuck, unable to penetrate further. An elbow smash, delivered without finesse, broke the Eldar's collarbone. An overhead slash would cleave the alien open, but Santar staggered when a second attacker mounted his back. He turned his ear from its hell scream, reaching up to throw it off, when it jolted and fell. Half its head and helm were missing, ruptured by an explosive round. Tarkan's icon winked once on the retinal tac display. The sniper's voice issued over the feed.
"Glory to the Gorgon!"
Santar finished the one with the broken collarbone, stamping on its prone form with his armoured boot. Then he wiped the blood leaking from his nose and gave a clipped salute. He knew Tarkan would see. Unable to feint and attack as they had in the desert basin, the wraith-like warriors were finding the Morlocks a tougher prospect out in the open. There, the cohesion of the Iron Hands counted for more than agility. To his left, Santar saw Desan shoulder barge an alien into the air, then swing up his bolter in his remaining hand to perforate it before it landed a ragged corpse. Santar thought he detected the trace of a smile when their eyes met briefly across the field. Desan laughed.
"Like shooting discus."
"Theatrics will avail you nothing, brother captain, except perhaps an early grave. Kill them quickly. Give no quarter."
"Reparation will have to wait," Desan replied. "It appears my enemies are all dead."
Alien corpses littered the ground, where the casualties amongst the Iron Hands were minimal. They had bloodied the Eldar. But more were coming, leaping through the energy shield with athletic and deadly grace.
"Here is your chance," said Santar,
before leaning towards the vocal amplifier in his gorget and grating an order that resounded across the battlefront.
"Consolidate. Iron has won."
Underfoot, the buried echoes of Ruman's payload could be felt. Seismic spikes registering on Santar's retinal display confirmed it. A synchronized chrono flashed up in one corner of his vision at the same time. He cried,
Advancing.
Morlocks joined him at either shoulder, their cataphractii warplate touching, pauldron to pauldron. The wraith-like warriors broke against the implacable black wall of ceramite confronting them. Some fought and made small gains, and Santar would remember those who died later, but united, the Terminators could not be denied. They rolled over the Eldar elite in an unyielding wave. Caught between an energy shield that only allowed them out and the advancing legionaries, there was nowhere for the aliens to run, and they were crushed underfoot. The Eldar behind them answered with heavy, relentless fire from their gun platforms. Cannon impact smashed into the Morlocks. A Terminator, it might have been Kador, was put on his back. Another, Santar couldn't tell who, was speared through the chest and fell. The rest kept moving, weathering the barrage.
A light shower, said Desan, barely audible above the storm.
We have less than a minute, brother, Santar told him.
More than enough, First Captain.
Bullying their way forwards, the Morlocks reached the crackling edge of the shield. The Eldar inside fell back, but kept up their fusillade of fire. Overhead, Ruman's cannons and the tanks of the army divisions pounded. Something else lurked behind the flicker haze, too. Eldar clad in robes and wielding arcane staves.
Tear it down,
roared Santar, warring with the ionized throb of the energy shield.
Hit it with everything you've got.
Thunder hammers and power mauls, eviscerators and combi bolters at point-blank range rattled against a field of glowing azure. Rippling violently, the shield bowed, but did not break. The chrono in the retinal displays of all the Iron Hands veterans reached zero. Its terminus presaged a series of deep subterranean detonations that split the surface open inside the shield as the mole mortar shells, burrowing below, exploded in a chain. Concussive bursts billowed upwards as the web the Eldar had woven around the node was unpicked. Flickering, initially, as a cluster of minute interrupts stuttered across its curvature, the shield flared once and then failed. Santar was first across its threshold.
At them! Glory to the Gorgon!
Reaping into the gun platforms, the Morlocks barely noticed the brutal ordnance from the tank divisions as they hammered the node. Even without the shield to protect it, the bone edifice was resilient, but cracks began to appear along its length. It was a massacre. Efficient, not bloodthirsty, but slaughter all the same. A warrior with a crackling falchion emerged from the melee. Santar met it with his lightning claws, but felt a tightening in the servos of his bionic arm as he applied the killing stroke. His follow-up was slower, too, as if pushing against inertia or the effects of high gravity. His legs were the same. He recalled the robed figures. A cohort of heavily armed alien warriors surrounded them.
Desan, can you still see? Santar asked.
Foes were coming at them from every angle, swinging pikes and blades, a rabble of carapace-armoured Eldar soldiers and the cloaked ranger caste the Iron Hands had fought earlier. One of them thrust an energy spear at Santar, which he barely turned aside. Seizing the haft, he pulled the warrior towards him and bludgeoned open its faceplate with his fist. The body sagged and was still, but the Eldar had left a score mark down the First Captain's flank.
Too close.
Another aimed a shuriken lance at his torso and blasted apart a section of armor plate. Santar swept his claw around to dispatch it, but felt the same drag that had slowed him a few seconds before. Recognizing these sensations, he shouted,
Desan, your eyes!
My sight is failing!
Darkness was boiling around the node, coiling from its tip in a thunderhead. Santar arched his neck to see a black cloud creeping down the side of the node and billowing towards them.
Throne of Earth! Not again!
Santar knew the carnage the storm and its curse of iron could inflict. Upon so many warriors conjoined with the machine, he dared not contemplate exactly how much. To his mind, there was little choice.
Hold advance, all companies.
Santar was caught, seized by indecision, just as his bionics were frozen by the approaching darkness.
We must move forward, Captain Attar voiced down the feed. First Captain, what are your orders?
Taking advantage of the respite, the robed conclave of Eldar was already re-establishing parts of the shield. It grew like an organic energy web behind the Morlocks. Shells and lasbursts from the heavy divisions caromed off the rapidly regenerating veil. Desan gripped Santar's shoulder guard.
We cannot stay here, Gabriel. Forward or back, which is it?
If they stayed, they could destroy the node, or at least slay the witches that had refashioned the shield. But they risked annihilation at their own hands, or the hands of their brothers, if they did. Tendrils of cloud, outriders of the dark veil, closed to within a few meters of the Iron Hands. They writhed like vipers.
So close.
You saw what it did to us in the desert basin,
Santar had made his decision. It tasted bitter as his mouth formed the words,
Fall back!
The retreat was slow and wearisome. Legionaries fought the mechanized parts of their bodies and tried to stop outright rebellion. Some failed and had to be dragged by their battle brothers. None, at least, were devoured by the storm, for to be lost to it was a death sentence. It boiled at the edge of the shield, shrouding what was left of the Eldar inside, but reached no farther. Even from a distance, Santar could feel the pull of the machine curse's influence. Absently, his armored fingers touched the gouges at his neck. The gorget had barely saved his life. He could still feel the prickling heat of his own lightning claw upon his skin, its electric stink in his nostrils.
So, what is our next recourse?
Desan had removed his visor and was standing beside the first captain, the two of them in close concert. Desan's scarred face was worse beneath the metal band he usually wore around his eyes, the skin swollen and ravaged. He reattached the visor to a pair of cranial implants in his temples, and the device whirred back to life.
Functioning perfectly, he said,
muttering rites of activation and purity.
So long as we stay out of the cloud, said Santar.
The tempest rippled and undulated like a dark ocean, slowly and mockingly for all its seeming innocuousness. Santar stared at it. He was standing in a half circle with his captains and their seconds, while the rest of the Legion waited farther back with their clan companies and looked on, beleaguered.
The shield was breached, and only partly regenerated, said Captain Attar.
Ruman's barrage had ceased, and the iron wrought joined them from the high ground where the heavies still waited. Santar turned to him next.
What's your assessment, Erasmus?
The shield is constructed of kinetic energy, but created psychically. Whether the Xenos have some form of generator sympathetic to their abilities, or another piece of fell alien technology, I can only theorize. As we've seen, it can be breached, but only through excessive force.
Desan frowned.
What about the cloud? How do we breach that?
Ruman turned his cold gaze on him.
Without suffering machine death, we cannot.
You think they can keep this up indefinitely? Asked Captain Medusan.
Desan stared into the darkness but could find no gap or weakness.
If our iron wrought is right, while the storm persists, there is no way for us to advance.
Santar's knuckles cracked with cybernetic resonance.
I would very much like to summon the Fist of Iron and bombard this site from existence.
Then do it, First Captain, said Medusan. We can further withdraw our forces and take the necessary cover in the deeper desert.
Ruman shook his head.
Negative. The Sensoria are unable to overcome whatever psychic baffles the Eldar have in place. We are more likely to exterminate ourselves than level the node.
Desan rubbed at his chin and frowned.
The shield is broken, but not down. The aliens' defences are severely weakened. If we can get warriors behind the veil to kill whatever is creating it...
Henrikos stepped up, interrupting.
I can get beyond that veil.
Desan scowled. You have a talent for intrusion, Brother Sergeant. A nod sufficed as apology from Henrikos. Santar's eyes narrowed.
I am listening. How can you enter the storm, brother, unless you want to end up impaled on your own sword? Because a warrior of flesh has nothing to fear from it.
Henrikos revealed the stump where he had detached his bionic hand.
It is safe, he said quickly. I can fight without it.
A host of hard, reproachful glances fell upon the sergeant.
You dishonour the Iron Creed, said Santar. That mechanized implant is part of rite and ritual. It is what makes us what we are. And what we are is confounding us, First Captain. I'm suggesting a different approach. One for which you'll be severely reprimanded. I'll bear whatever punishment is deemed fit.
Santar glared, fighting the urge to mete out that punishment immediately.
Even if it is death.
Henrikos was stoic.
I can breach the veil.
Alone? Attar sounded dubious.
No, not alone,
Santar answered as he saw a unit of army veterans approaching the conclave of Iron Hand's officers. They looked on edge to be in the presence of the hulking warriors and kept together. Santar fought down his disdain and tried to see soldiers in the children before him. Their commanding officer was a hoary-looking colonel of the Sarvan Masonites, who knelt before the Iron Hands like a serf. Unlike some of his more nervous charges, he did not tremble. Desan glared at him from the mountainous summit of his cataphractii warplate.
"Speak your name."
"Lords," said the man, his voice gravelly from smoking too much tobacco or simple age. "I am Marshal Vort Salazarian of the Sarvan 254th, the Masonites, and I have served the Emperor's Great Crusade and your Lord Gorgon for 4 decades.
Desan touched the platinum stud embedded in his skull.
"Do not speak to me of service, old man. What do you know of it?"
Attar folded his immense bionic arms, whilst Medusan merely glowered. They each carried platinum studs, and had each fought longer campaigns than most men had lifetimes. To his credit, Colonel Salazarian didn't blink, not once.
"I meant no offence. We will accompany Sergeant Henrikos into the storm," he said, licking his lips to moisten his dry mouth. The presence of space marines tended to have that effect on humans. "If you will allow us to, we will do that. It would be our honour."
Desan scowled.
"Flesh is weak," he said,
but Santar raised his hand for silence. The army veterans looked thin and feeble, even the grizzled colonel, but so too did the Eldar, and they had proven formidable. Slowly shaking his head, Desan said,
"They will break, and we will have lost one of our own into the bargain."
"Enough," stated Santar, regarding the kneeling man. He bade him stand. "I am not a king, and you are not my subject. On your feet." Nodding at Desan, Santar asked the colonel, "Is he right? Will you break?" Salazarian squared his shoulders and thrust out his jaw.
"Let us show you our worth. We will not break, my lord. We have endured this far."
"Few mere men can make that claim," said Henrikos.
Santar's eyes were chips of slate when he met his gaze.
"I knew you had an affinity for humans, Sergeant. I saw it when you gave your report concerning the army divisions."
He paused, eyeing first the storm and then the army veterans.
"It is better to act and ask for forgiveness later than be paralyzed by indecision."
He'd heard Ferris Manor say that before. Santar wished he could ask for his guidance right now. Since he could not, he said,
"You vouch for this man and his warriors?"
"It will be my death if they fail," said Henrikos.
"You are right about that," Santar told him, making the threat very clear. "Find the coven, or whatever means the Eldar are using to perpetuate that storm, and remove it. We will follow in after and eliminate whatever is left standing. The path is laid, brother. All you need do is to follow it."
Henrikos saluted and went to muster the rest of the Masonites. After he had gone, Desan shook his head.
"Reckless bravery kills warriors swifter than any bolter or blade," he pointed at the storm bank. "Those men will die in there. Henrikos too."
Santar watched the ominous black cloud, imagined it watching him back with a feral sentience. When they were retreating, when its tendrils had closed with the delicate inexorability of a drifting fog, he'd felt a crushing weight in his chest, as if his limbs had been bound in meter-thick ferrocrete. They all felt it, each and every one of them, that was significantly part machine. All of their strength, the power of a legion at his disposal, and all any of them could do was watch.
"Then I hope they die well, and make a worthy sacrifice. But I promise you this, one way or another, we are bringing that node down. The Gorgon has willed it."
Cold stone chilled his face. A trickle of water from some underground stream wet his lips and brought him round. Dazed and groggy from the poison, Ferrus rolled onto his back and groaned. He had never felt so weak. He couldn't remember passing out. It must have happened on the way from the abattoir. Attempting to rise unleashed a hellish crescendo crashing into his mind. Blood thundered in his ears. He held his head and, wincing, got to one knee. Lead dragged at his limbs, made him sluggish and slow. Forge Breaker acted as a crutch. Twice now since being in the labyrinth he had used it ignobly. The fact did not sit well with the Primarch, who surveyed his surroundings, once standing again. Mercifully, the serpent, or whatever it was, had gone. Even the sibilance of its presence was absent, and a terrible silence replaced it. Ferrus doubted he would live if he faced it at that moment. He could barely lift his feet, let alone a weapon. He patted the pommel of Draken.
"Thank you, brother."
The way behind him was darkness. He couldn't even see the abattoir now, and wondered how long and how far he had wandered in delirium. Ahead was darkness too, but with a tiny shard of light like a beacon to guide him through a storm. The turbulence of his thoughts pulled at him.
What had the creature said? "Angel exterminatus."
Ferrus understood the words, but not their meaning. It pained him to think about them, and the vague sense of flame intruded at the edges of his consciousness when he did. With motion, his strength began to return. His arm was still ravaged where the living silver had been melted away, but it didn't burn as badly. His neck itched like all hell, though, and he suspected the creature had dealt a secondary wound he was unaware of until that moment. But when he touched the skin beneath his gorget, it was uninjured. Biting down his irritation, Ferrus walked slowly towards the shard of light. Likely this was yet another trick, some fresh torture with which to test him. Ferrus had yet to discern its purpose. He reasoned that if his enemies meant to kill him, they would have done so already, or at least tried harder and more overtly. Xenos, particularly the Elder, were cryptic and capricious, even to one with the formidable mental acuity of a Primarch. Their rationale was lost on him. The thing that hunted him was no serpent, it was something darker, something primordial, and he suspected not something wholly fashioned by his captors. It had meant to end his life. He felt all its rage, its denial, its sadistic yearning, of which Ferrus was the focus. When they had fought, he could sense this, but it was inchoate, as if the creature itself was only partially realized. Ferrus was uncertain what that meant.
One thing he could be sure of was that it wasn't dead and would return for him. Whatever the Eldar's original plan, he knew he would have to kill the creature now to escape.
Entering through the shard of light that had widened into a brilliant chasm to allow him passage, Ferrus steeled himself for that battle to come. He would not have long to wait. A series of grand triumphal archways led into a long processional before him. They had the appearance of great gates, but with their portals laid open and shattered to potential invasion. Fire-blackened stone crept at their edges, and ugly shards were chipped from every stone. The chasm of light had closed behind him, leaving no visible way out. As he had suspected, this was to be the final arena. Ferrus felt like a giant, touring a grand but blasted palace in miniature. As he passed along the processional, he left the sundered gates behind and walked into an appended chamber. Even scaled down in miniature, the great hall was immense. A giant would have been dwarfed by it. Gothic architectural flourishes dominated, but they were bleak and austere, suggestive of faded glories and cultural stagnation. Skulls lined the walls as if part of some vast reliquary, and a sombre mood pervaded its grim design. A monument to decay and everlasting decline. Here, opulence had long since given in to decrepitude. As he made his way across the diminutive flagstones underfoot, Ferrus realized it was no great hall, nor had it ever been so. It was a tomb. And at the end of a cracked plaza, wreathed with gossamer-thin webs and the rough patina of heavy age, there stood a massive throne, out of scale with the rest of the palace. Slumped upon it, in emaciated repose, sat a king. The king of stagnation, lord of a decaying empire. His robes were tattered, his body a flesh-starved and skeletal ruin. He bore no crown, only a rictus grimace, a final pained expression of a dream unfulfilled. He towered over Ferrus, glaring down through abyssal eye sockets, the colour of sackcloth. A hissing breath, its last, escaped the undead king's mouth and drew a nerve tremor of consternation from the Primarch's face. Half expecting the revenant to rise, he took a backward step. Only when the breath continued long after it should have ended did Ferrus realize it was not the king, but something else that gave the corpse its mimicked speech. Uncoiling from its hiding place behind the tarnished throne of the dead king was the serpent. The head and neck stood erect, whilst its vast body undulated beneath it, providing support. Mirrored silver sheathed its flanks. Its eyes were sulphur-yellow pools of corruption, cut open with black dagger-thin pupils. Hate exuded in a heady musk that made the Primarch's senses lurch vertiginously. He reached for Forgebreaker, but the serpent sprang at him, faster than Mercury, and Ferrus was forced to seize its jaws before they snapped around his throat. Hot, stinking spittle, acid tang spattered the Primarch's face, and he snarled. Fighting this beast was like clinging to liquid. But Ferrus wrestled it down and wrapped his arms around its neck before it could wriggle free. Thrashing hard, the serpent hauled him off the ground and smashed him down again. Lances of agony impaled his back and shoulder. His neck felt about ready to crack as the burning wound that was not a wound around his throat smouldered like hellfire.
"I am the Gorgon," he yelled. "I am a Primarch."
His head hit something hard, and dark spikes intruded at the edge of his sight. A red rime layered his vision, but Ferrus held on. He held on and squeezed. Despite the serpent's fervent efforts, Ferrus slowly tightened his grip.
He would strangle it, crush every ounce of life from the creature until it lay cold and unmoving. Then he would stave its skull to a crimson paste. "Back from the underworld," he spat. "You should have stayed dead, Azinoth." For what else could it be but a manifestation of that dread creature? The serpent's head turned in a way that should have broken its neck in the Primarch's iron grip. Lips that should not be lips parted. Eyes that were human and familiar regarded him. A mane of hair crept down its back as a noble and patrician countenance asserted itself across previously reptilian features.
"I," it said, without hint of sibilance, "I am not." The words were lyrical, musical, and rich. "Azinoth."
Ferus knew, as he knew the voice and the face before him. It was the perfect killer. Preternaturally fast and superhumanly strong. Only another Primarch could have defeated it. Only another Primarch. He relaxed his grip, and a flash of transformation blended the human visage with that of the creature. A rack of saliva-wet fangs pierced its gums, drawing blood with the violent metamorphosis. Eyes that had been warm and fraternal narrowed to yellow knife slashes. Scaled flesh colonized its lower neck and cheekbones like a contagion. Fighting down the urge to vomit, Ferus reasserted his grip. His eyes widened in eerie synchronicity with the creature's as its neck was slowly crushed. It struggled. It wanted to live, to manifest, but Ferus would kill it. He would end it with his bare hands.
"You are not him," he told it through a barricade of clenched teeth.
A final tortured rasp, part reptilian, part human, slipped from the serpent's mouth, and it became still and lifeless. Giving it one final squeeze until it felt as though his knuckles might break, Ferus let go, and the creature slid to the ground, dead. A long, trembling breath came from his throat, and he rubbed his eyes as if to banish a bad dream. Disquiet turned to anger. Ferus pulled out Forgebreaker and did as he'd vowed. He kept going for a full minute before his arms and shoulders ached at him to stop. Little was left of the creature when he was done. Just a ruddy smear. He was breathing hard and beads of sweat cascaded from his brow. He felt the chill of evaporation against his fevered skin and followed that sensation all the way to the throne. Enraged, Ferus stormed towards the corpse king, hauled it one-handed from its seat of office and smashed it into pieces of bone on the ground.
"Your reign is ended," he told it, before stowing the hammer and gripping an arm of the throne in each hand. Ripping it aside, tearing it bodily from its bearings, Ferus revealed a doorway of light. Casting the wretched seat aside, he stepped through the portal and prepared to face his tormentors. It was not as he expected. An orrery of worlds and stars revolved before him, locked in an infinite space that had no dimension, no limit, or discernible edges. The effect was disconcerting. The Primarch's gaze was drawn to a dominant prime world, sitting amongst four others in a system of stars and desolate moons. The world was black, and Ferus was reminded of the dark sand that had been underfoot for so much of his journey. Then, as if a giant celestial match or the contrail of a meteor had been struck against its surface, a flame was born upon the prime world. It grew into a conflagration, eclipsing all of its continents and seas, enveloping them like a baleful sun. Only once the transformation was absolute did Ferus realize it was not a sun at all, but a burning red eye with a black pupil.
As the tableau unfolded further, he saw a slow-moving ring of black iron grow around the red world that held its fire in place, until a second ring of cobalt joined it. Though it burned furiously, the eye could not escape the combined rings of metal sent to contain it. The sun faded and finally blinked out, leaving the world black and still once more. Ferrus reached out to touch the orrery, but his silver hand passed through it, revealing the illusion. It vanished like smoke in an eye blink.
"What is this?" he snapped. "More signs, more games?"
"Not a game," said a deep, faintly musical voice.
Ferrus turned to face his captor, Forgebreaker gripped in his closed fists.
"It is the future, your future," said the Elder, "if you wish it to be."
The alien was robed, the colours subdued but manifold. Arcane sigils were stitched into the iridescent fabric, but also hung on gossamer-thin chains or from glittering diamond threads. It wore no helmet or mask, but showed a long face of high cheekbones and a tapered chin that jutted like a dagger. Strange tattoos marked its flesh and were shaven into the side of its scalp, from which a long mane of golden hair cascaded. Fathomless wisdom and capricious intellect glittered in the almond-shaped eyes that regarded the Primarch, but also fear.
"You have reached a fork in the road, Ferrus Manus. The path you are on leads to death, but another leads to survival and the changing of a great many things in the galaxy," said the Elder. "You do not realize how important you are."
It opened its hands in a gesture of peace and solidarity. All Ferrus saw was an alien deceiver.
"And you expect me to believe you, creature?"
He spoke plainly and calmly. There was none of the untempered rage of earlier.
"I offer you hope. I offer it to the galaxy," it pleaded. "You can change everything."
Ferrus smiled, but it was a hollow gesture. The Elder's shoulders sagged when it saw it.
"I know I will die," the Primarch said, "just as I know my place and duty. It matters not if it is upon some blackened world I have never seen, or the very crags of Medusa itself. I am a warrior king, alien, but I am also something else, human. And unlike you, Elder, we humans do not submit to fate." His eyes flashed with fire. "We shape it."
"You are mistaken."
"No, you are the one who has made the grievous error by trapping me here," said Ferrus, swinging Forgebreaker around. The serpent's gore flicked off the head, a taste of things to come. "An error only exceeded by you showing yourself to me now."
"Please, I offer life," said the alien.
"You offer a cage of predestiny," snarled Ferrus. "It is your last desperate gambit," he said, before he charged.
"Heed me," cried the Elder,
backing away and throwing up a psychic shield to defend itself.
"It does not have to be this way. Do not give in to wrath."
"Wrath is what I am," he roared. "I am a warrior king, born from battle's blood."
No mind-fashioned shield could stay the destructive fury of Forgebreaker, not when wielded by its master. The defences were shattered, and the psychic shards bit into the Elder as painfully as any blade. It recoiled and threw a jag of arc lightning that Ferrus deflected with his shoulder guard. Ozone stink filled his nostrils, but he was not about to be deterred. His bellow shook the fabric of the constructed world around him, the psychic echo of his rage unpinning it at the seams.
Now, release me!
Sweating, bleeding and clenched by fear, the Eldar fled through a fissure in the fake reality. Ferus reached out, tried to slip through the same doorway as the Eldar witch, but a corona of perfect light repelled him.
Release me!
The words stretched out into infinity as the light engulfed him, drowning his senses until they merged, until darkness overwhelmed them and it felt like he was falling forever. The last coven witch slid off his sword, leaving a trail of alien blood along the blade. Even with its death and the slow banishment of the Black Storm, Bion Henrikos knew he was dead. Of the 6,000 veterans he had led into the darkness, barely 800 remained. They circled the Iron Hand, an injured Colonel Salazarian fighting hard alongside him, despite the blood in his lungs. The army commander squinted through one eye, the other one had been plucked out by an Elder's knife, and saw they were overrun. For the first time in an hour, Salazarian stopped barking orders to his men. Henrikos recognized his sudden fatalism.
"You gave us back our dignity and honor," said the colonel, "and I thank you for that, my lord."
A high-pitched whine, rapid air displacement, and the splash of hot fluid against his face told Henrikos the old man was dead before he saw the gaping hole in the veteran's chest. Salazarian fell, dead-eyed and still, into the arms of the Iron Hand who cradled him to the ground. The storm was ebbing, but the darkness of it was slow to disperse. His brothers would not reach him in time. Men were dying in droves as the Eldar gave their last. They were dying too, but were not content to do so alone. They wanted the Space Marine's head. They wanted Bion Henrikos.
"For the Gorgon!" he cried,
leaving his Medusan steel edge impaled in the earth so he could draw his bolt pistol. Shells sprayed in an arc of muzzle flare that left a tongue of fire in the air. Alien bodies were struck and died in explosive agony. A headshot through the darkness took out a war leader whose falchion had looked as keen as its wielder.
"For the
Something hit Henrikos in the neck, possibly a shuriken from an Eldar bowcaster. He grunted, felt it burn. A lasbeam pierced his thigh a half-second later. He staggered, slid the combat shield off his butchered forearm, and tried to clutch the graze across his throat with the stump of his wrist, but found it wanting. A further beam lanced his torso, somewhere between chest and shoulder. Falling to one knee, Henrikos fired off a desultory burst. Warning icons flashed loudly and insistently on his retinal display. He ripped off his helm to silence them. Closing his eyes, Henrikos prepared for the end, when a hand touched his shoulder, and he opened them again.
"The war's not done with you yet, Iron Hand," said a voice of ice and fire.
The giant before Bion Henrikos was clad in armor of coal black. His powerful arms shimmered with lustrous silver that flowed like mercury. Eyes of napped flint regarded him sternly, and the hammer in his hand could sunder mountains. Ferus Manus had returned, and the Eldar were fleeing.
"The storm has ended, brother," said the Primarch, and held out his hand. "Now stand with me to see it finished."
Henrikos heard the rest of the Legion approaching through the fire and smoke of the battle. Santar and the Morlocks were first to the Primarch's side. Joy at the sight of the father was hard for them to contain. Their bolters and blades sang. The node fell quickly, though much of what followed was a blur for Henrikos. He carried Salazarian back to friendly lines. Barely 300 of the veterans returned alive with him. They would later be honored for their part and recognized as adopted sons of Medusa. They were the first of the Chain Veil, destined to be its captains, and living proof of the concession that, from that day, not all flesh was weak. Santar found him at the edge of the battlefield, standing vigil over Bion Henrikos. After he'd returned the body of Colonel Salazarian, the sergeant had fallen unconscious from his injuries.
"He will live," said the Gorgon, "but he will need further augmentation."
"As is his right. The Iron Fathers can tend to him," Santar replied. "I had thought to punish him for turning on the Iron Creed."
"You still should."
Santar considered that, but other thoughts were dominant in his mind and rose to the surface. "What happened?"
"It doesn't matter," said Ferris in a quiet voice.
His mood hardened abruptly, and he met the first captain's questioning gaze.
"It changes nothing."
Primarch beckoned to one of his legionaries, who set up a hololithic projector in the earth. Word had reached the Iron Hands that the Salamanders had discovered a second prime node in the jungle. With victory in the desert, Ferris was determined to meet his brother. "Are we leaving?" asked Santar, as the hololith came to life in a grainy cone of grey light.
"We are. Gather the Morlocks and tell them we're headed to the jungle."
A thin smile betrayed the Primarch's pleasure.
"My brother has need of us."
As Ferris began his communication with Vulcan, Santar did as he was ordered, but despite his lord's return, he couldn't shake the feeling that all was not well. Whatever had occurred during the Gorgon's absence had left an indelible mark, one that would resonate into the future. Perhaps all their futures. The ossified highways that led from their cocoon sanctuary were perilous, but there was little choice but to brave them. The scrap of malfeasant sentience that had found its way into Lathsario's pseudo-world was dead, slain by the Gorgon. It would be millennia before it could return. Lathsario staggered, and the diviner helped him walk. The ignorant creature he was trying to save had wounded him. Despair and anguish bled out of him in a psychic wake that would attract other predators. They needed to find safe haven quickly.
"I have failed," he moaned, utterly desolated. "I have allowed a war to come to pass that will decimate our race when we are already so few."
The diviner's attention was on the webway around them. He kept his senses alert to any crack, any seemingly insignificant fissure. Many sub-realms had already been devoured, and more would follow, as the conflict Lathsariel had fought so hard to prevent came to pass. Such things were inevitable, and so the diviner's mood was sanguine.
"It was not your war to avert," he said,
opening up a fresh channel in the bone road that was seldom trodden and therefore safer.
"A healing place is close."
Lathsario did not answer. The Farseer was inconsolable.
"Humans are closed-minded," said the diviner. "Even those that consider themselves greater, like the Gorgon, he has feet of iron fixed to his fate and his doom."
"But he does not condemn himself alone, but a galaxy, one that is destined to be engulfed in flames."
Cool light bathed them as they found the healing place at last. The diviner set Lathsariel down upon a slab of bone and bade him rest. As the other Farseer faded from consciousness, the diviner revisited his vision of prescience. 3 times he had seen the exact same eventuality unfold. That in itself was remarkable.
"There is hope," he muttered, "in the empire of the Battle King, he who would install an heir. Even if the Gorgon falls and fails to heed our warning, there is another who will listen. One who was lost."
Feet of Iron was written by Nick Keim and read by David Timpson. It was produced by Heavy Entertainment for Black Library. This work is copyrighted by Games Workshop Limited, 2012. All rights reserved.